We're on mantra number two. This is on page number 23. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. The words for words on page 23. Kurvan, doing continuously. Eva, thus. Iha, during this span of life. Karmani, work. Jijivishet, one should desire to live. Shatam, 100. Samaha, years. Evam, so living. Twayi, unto you. Na, no. Anyata, alternative. Itaha, from this path. Asti, there is. Na, not. Karma, work. Lipyate, can be bound. Nare, unto a man. There are book stands. On top, there's this, Shishupanishad. Please make yourself comfortable. Purport. No one wants to die. Everyone wants to live as long as he can drag on. This tendency is visible, not only individually, but also collectively in the community, society, and nation. There is a hard struggle for life by all kinds of living entities, and the Vedas say that this is quite natural. The living being is eternal by nature, but due to his bondage and material existence, he has to change his body over and over. This process is called transmigration of the soul or karma bandhana, bondage by one's work. The living entity has to work for his livelihood because that is the law of material nature. And if he does not act according to his prescribed duties, he transgresses the law of nature and binds himself more and more to the cycle of birth and death in the many species of life. Other life forms are also subject to the cycle of birth and death, but when the living entity attains a human life, he gets a chance to get free from the chains of karma. Karma, akarma, and vikarma are very clearly described in Bhagavad Gita. Actions that are performed in terms of one's prescribed duties, as mentioned in the revealed scriptures, are called karma. Actions that free one from the cycle of birth and death are called akarma. And actions that are performed through the misuse of one's freedom and that direct one to the lower forms are called vikarma. Of these three types of action, that which frees one from the bondage to karma is preferred by intelligent men. Ordinary men wish to perform good work in order to be recognized and achieve some higher status of life in this world or in heaven. But more advanced men want to be free altogether from the actions and reactions of work. Intelligent men well know that both good and bad work equally bind one to these material qualities. Consequently, they seek that work which will free them from the reactions of both good and bad work. Such liberating work is described here in the pages of Shishupanishad. The instructions of Shishupanishad are more elaborately explained in the Bhagavad Gita, sometimes called the Gita Upanishad, the cream of all the Vedas, the cream of all the Upanishads. In Bhagavad Gita 3:9-16, the personality of Godhead says that one cannot attain the state of naishkarmya or akarma without executing the prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedic literature. This literature can regulate the working energy of a human being in such a way that he can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. When he realizes the authority of the Supreme Personality of God at Vasudeva or Krishna, it is to be understood that he has attained the stage of positive knowledge. In this purified stage, the modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, cannot act, and he is able to work on the basis of naishkarmya. Such work does not bind one to the cycle of birth and death. Factually, no one has to do anything more than render devotional service to the Lord. However, in the lower stages of life, one cannot immediately adopt the activities of devotional service, nor can one completely stop fruit of work. A conditioned soul is accustomed to working for sense gratification, for his own selfish interest, immediate or extended. An ordinary man works for his own sense enjoyment And when this principle of sense enjoyment is extended to include his society, nation, or humanity in general, it assumes various attractive names such as altruism, socialism, communism, nationalism, and humanitarianism. These isms are certainly very attractive forms of karma bandhana, karmic bondage. But the Vedic instruction of Shirsha Upanishad is that if one actually wants to live for any of the above isms, he should make them God-centered. There is no harm in becoming a family man or an altruist, a socialist, a communist, or nationalist, or a humanitarian, provided that one executes his activities in relation with Ishavasya, the God-centered conception. In the Bhagavad Gita 2.40, Lord Krishna states that God-centered activities are so valuable that just a few of them can save a person from the greatest danger. The greatest danger of life is the danger of gliding down again into the evolutionary cycle of birth and death among the 8,400,000 species. If somehow or other a man misses the spiritual opportunity afforded by his human form of life and falls down again into the evolutionary cycle, he must be considered most unfortunate. Due to his defective senses, a foolish man cannot see that this is happening. Consequently, Shirsha Upanishad advises us to exert our energy in the spirit of Ishavasya. Being so engaged, we may wish to live for many, many years. Otherwise, a long life in itself has no value. A tree lives for hundreds and hundreds of years, but there is no point in living a long time like trees, or breathing like bellows, or begetting children like hogs and dogs, or eating like camels. A humble, God-centered life is more valuable than a colossal hopes of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism. When altruistic activities are executed in the spirit of Shirsha Upanishad, they become a form of karma yoga. Such activities are recommended in the Bhagavad Gita 18:5-9, for they guarantee their executor protection from the danger of sliding down into the evolutionary process of birth and death. Even though such God-centered activities may be half-finished, they are still good for the executor, because they will guarantee him a human form in his next birth. In this way, one can have another chance to improve his position on the path of liberation. How one can execute God-centered activities is elaborately explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. We have rendered this book into English as the Nectar of Devotion. We recommend this valuable book to all who are interested in performing their activities in the spirit of Shirsha Upanishad. Hare Krishna. Welcome. Are you all comfortable? Okay. There are many good causes, but we should not miss the great cause, the one great cause for the sake of the many good causes. And the great cause is Tasyarte Yachano Nitya Uttama Shloka Vartaya, described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Ayur Harati Vaipumsam Udyan Ashtan Chayanaso Tasyarte Yachano Nita Uttama Shloka Vartaya. The sun is rising and setting, and it's taking away the life of everyone by its setting and rising and setting, except for one who listens to Hari Katha. By hearing the transcendental sound vibration about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one has actually making tangible progress. Otherwise, there's no progress at all in this world through altruism, through other kinds of isms, as Srila Prabhupada mentions here. The human form is specifically meant for Yajnavai Vishnu, for performing sacrifice for Vishnu, who's the root of everything and the center of everything. If we miss the center, then we don't become nourished and we don't make progress. But when we learn the principle of watering the root and giving our energies to the center of all existence, which is Krishna, then we actually connect and we make real progress. Labham sudulabhamidam bahubhajam sambhavante manushyamartadam anityam apihadhira. Srimad Bhagavatam says it's extremely rare to get the human form of life, and it's also temporary, like all the other forms of life. There are many species mentioned by Manu, Jalaja Navalakshani Stavara Lakshavimsati Krimaya Rudrasankhyakya, that there are 8,400,000 species of life. I think you can look that one up. Jalaja Navalakshani Stavara Lakshavimsati Krimaya Rudrasankhyakya Pakshinam Dasha Lakshinam. What page? 370 what? 372, for those of you who are keeping score at home in your Prabhupada Shloka book, 372. Padma Purana. Jalaja Navalakshani Stavara Lakshavimshati Kramayo Rujasankhyakya Pakshinam Dashalakshanam Shimsha Lakshani Pashava Chakshu Lakshani Manushaha. There are 900,000 species living in the water. There are 2 million non-moving living entities, stavara, such as trees and plants. There are 1,100,000 species of insects and reptiles, and 1 million species of birds. As far as quadrupeds are concerned, there are 3 million varieties, and there are 400,000 human species. All of them are being moved by the force of the three modes of material nature. But when one comes to the human form of life, there's a special opportunity, and it's rare. Labham sudulabham. It's rare to get that 400,000 species, into that 400,000 species, the human form of life. Labha sudulabham idam bahusambhavante. After many, many births, one may come to that, winning the lottery of the species. Manushyam artadam anityam apihadira. It's anityam, it's not permanent, but it's extremely valuable. So the real value can be attained by connecting one's activities, whatever they are, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in this purport, Prabhupada mentioned that it's a gradual process. From whatever situation we're in now, we have to make the proper arrangement to connect our activities to the service of Krishna. And by that, we'll gradually move towards him. We can't artificially renounce our nature, but we have to engage it in the service of the Lord. There's karma, akarma, and vikarma. Karma is mentioned here as the activities which are prescribed by the Vedas, which help us to elevate ourselves to a better position of life. This is mentioned, Rupa Goswami talks about a hierarchy. Karmi bhya parito hare priyataya vyaktim yayur jnaninas. He says that there are the karmis and then the jnanis. And karmi bhya parito hare priyataya vyaktim yayur jnaninas. You can look that one up. 337. Tebyo jnana vimukta bhakti parama premaika nishtastata tebyastha pashupala pankacha drishastabhyo pisararika prishta tadvadiyam tadiya sarasi tam nashayat kriti. In the Shastra it is said that of all types of fruitive workers, he who is advanced in knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord Hari. Out of many such people who are advanced in knowledge, jnanis, one who is practically liberated by virtue of his knowledge may take to devotional service. He is superior to the others. However, one who has actually attained prema, pure love of Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna, Hurkund Lake is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as this most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radhakund and in a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings, a prakrita bhava, render loving service to the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, who perform their Ashtaka Lila Lila, their eternal eightfold daily pastimes. Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of the Radhakund are the most fortunate people in the universe. So, in the hierarchy, Karmi Bhya Parita Hare Priyataya. So, here it's mentioned that the Karmis, they're actually favored because they're following some system. And they're dear to Krishna because they follow the process mentioned in the Vedas. But above them are the Gyanis, and above them are the Bhaktas, and then there's a hierarchy in the Bhaktas, those who are pure devotees, all the way up to Srimati Radharani, who's the topmost servitor of Krishna. So human life is an opportunity for progressing from whatever situation I'm in now to the highest position, and that is to be engaged in pure devotional service to the Lord. So this verse gives us the directive that we must follow, and it's a relief. There's no alternative to this way for man, to act in such a way that all one's activities are connected to Isha, the Supreme Controller. And when we do that, there's relief, because it's very difficult to be the Supreme Controller oneself when we don't have the qualification. And when we take shelter of Isha and connect our activities and our resources, whatever we have, to him, then we become surcharged with energy and feel happy. Great relief. Don't try to control the outcome. Show up, be on time, tell the truth, and don't try to control the outcome. Comments, reflections, questions? No. From the American Indians. You want a microphone? Okay. Yes, Hansapriya.
Actually, I'm just amazed again that how the spiritual knowledge can serve the all the aspect of the life, like you said, show up on time, you know, and live on outcome on Krishna. So kind of it's like not just prepare for the spiritual life, but all the factors of the life. Like, I can so much relate to my interview process, that how this whole, all this what you mentioned today, how it can relate to that as well.
Like?
So nourishes, this nourishes everything else as well. That's what I felt.
Rupa Goswami writes in the Nectar Devotion that one should not be neglectful in ordinary dealings. What about that? It's an aspect of devotional service that one should not be neglectful in ordinary dealings. Hare Krishna.
Where's that?
It's in the Nectar of Devotion. Shouldn't be neglectful in ordinary dealings. So the verse we're discussing, Kurvan Eveha Karmani, Kurvan Eveha Karmani Jijivishekshatam Sama, Evam Twai Nanyate Tosti Na Karma Lipite Nare. One may continuously go on doing work in this way for hundreds of years. There's no alternative to this way for man. And what is that way? It's mentioned earlier, we understand, Isavasham idam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bunjita magrida kasasudhanam. Everything animate or inanimate that's within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Tena tyaktena bunjita. It's set aside for you. Yes.
Then a question comes, how do we know which one, what is set aside as a quota for us?
Watch the birds. You look at the birds, you know, they automatically have everything they need. They're fully equipped to live their lives. And Jesus said this, observe the birds in the field and see how they live. You'll have a sense. In the morning, sometimes I sit out in my backyard. There's lots of trees blooming, and there's lots of birds. Please take a front row seat, Balaram Chandra Prabhu. And they all have what they need. This morning I watched a hummingbird, and I have a little bush blooming like anything right outside my kutir. And it's got thousands of tiny little red flowers on it. And the hummingbird came. I sat and watched. He was there for about 2 minutes. He got every one of them practically. And so quickly, he's so adroit, flying in and out of the branches, and he'd suck a little nectar from each flower. And then you look around. I'd look around, and in tops of other trees, the other birds are getting just what they need. There's seeds. There's worms. They're all there. So it's really a sense of observing how everything's going on by Krishna's arrangement. If you observe the birds and you see how they're being fed, they have a natural sense of how to build a little nest. Everyone has to have a little nest. It doesn't have to be as big as Kmart. It can just, you know, a little place. And there are things which come more naturally than others in life. And we shouldn't over-endeavor for things that are very difficult to obtain. So that's one of the proscriptions by Rupa Goswami, where he says, Atyahara prayashascha prajalpo niyamagraha. So atyahara means this tendency to collect more than I need. There's certain things I need, certain amount I need to put on to protect my body and a structure to live in, a certain amount of money that I need, and you don't need to try really hard to get more, just to hoard it or to have more. Because ultimately, by the law of nature, a person who's a billionaire can enjoy the same amount of happiness as somebody who's broke. I mean, you look at people who don't have a lot of money and they come from a culture where they know how to enjoy. Like I see oftentimes in the parks all around the Bay Area, there's lots of beautiful parks. And oftentimes I see that people, Hispanics, they know the beauty and of nature and how to go to a park with their family and have fun. And it's free. And they're happy. In China, people go out, and in Thailand too, they go out to the park in the morning and they do Tai Chi, they sing together, they do all kinds of things that are free and fun. And you don't have to have $1 billion. They're just as happy sitting and singing. Acharya Chandra told me this. He said in Russia, people growing up, oftentimes they didn't have a lot of money, but he was taught by his teachers, by his parents, that you enjoy through beauty. So find beauty, like through art and music, and if people get together. If you go to Acharya Chandra's and Aruni's house, immediately all the music comes out, and you're singing and dancing, and you're happy. It doesn't matter where you are. So Prabhupada used to say, a man with $1 billion, if he has a capacity to eat 4 chapatis, he's working hard, he's on the phone all day, does he have any time to talk or go to the park? No, because he's got to make another $4 billion this year. And how many chapatis can he eat? The same as the guy who's sitting at the park bench, 4 chapatis. That's all he can ingest. Tena tyaktena. That's what's set aside for him. And he's not going to get any more than that. And Krishna's not going to cheat him. If he's not going to cheat the little birds, he's giving them a whole yard full of flowers. And that hummingbird was happy as anything, just taking in the nectar And it was free to him. It was like he owns the yard. And that's his little quota he gets. It's all marked by him, by the Lord. He puts a little red color on it so he knows that's mine. And he goes and takes it. The snails, they take their quota out of the garden. They come and they're little vegetarians walking around. They go and they eat, whatever's available. And the earthworms, they're eating earth, apparently. And everyone has their little niche. So, yadrichcha labasantushto. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yadrichcha, things that come easily, they come of their own accord, naturally, be satisfied with those. Satisfied with things that have come of their own accord, and naturally, you can't force it.
Just say some people are working, some are doing business, some are wealthy. Can we take it to mean that if a person is, let's say, working or doing business and he's making money, he's getting whatever he gets, can we take it to mean that whatever money he makes by his work or business, that is set aside for him as his quota, or it doesn't apply in that sense?
No, it applies. Everyone has a certain capacity and works in a certain way. But really it has to do with our mentality and our intention. So people have different capacities, and everyone can dovetail what they have in the service of Krishna. You know, some people, it's their karma to get to be situated in the middle of a lot of people, and they're organizing them, and energy is flowing, there's money coming in and things like that. That's their quota. Comes naturally. Other people, they can try hard their whole life. They can buy every success book that's on the market. And I've seen it. I once helped clear out the library of someone who just passed away. And they died broke without many prospects in life. But they had the most complete success library, how to make money library of anybody I've ever seen. And there were boxes and boxes of books about how to get rich. And I was thinking as I was helping to clean out the library that, they gave it a shot. But they didn't necessarily get it. And you'll see other people that just naturally these things come without them trying. It's a carryover from the last life. You know, the quota of what somebody gets, tena tyak tena bunjita, and what capacity they have to organize it and to enjoy it and such. But if those things aren't connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then they're maya and they're darkness. Ritertam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tadvidyara mano mayam yatabhaso yatatamaha. Krishna told Brahma in the very beginning that anything that you see that doesn't have a relationship to me, know it as my illusory energy. And it has no value. How about that? You get something and, you know, there's no value in it. You work hard and you inquire later. It's like, what did I get? Well, sir, we hate to tell you, but there's no value in it. There's no money in your account. It was a scam, the whole thing. It was a colossal hoax. What you thought you got, what you thought they were sending you is useless. So, on the other side, the positive side is that we have freedom in the human form of life to endeavor for making spiritual advancement as much as we like. It's compared to a bird when the cage is open and you can actually go out. The rest of the species of life, the cage is closed. You're not invited yet to come out. You're still processing. But when you come to the human form of life, cage is open. And little bird can fly free. So we should try to find that hole, how to get out of the cage and learn the life of freedom. Prisoners, when they get out of jail, they're habituated to the institution. So oftentimes they try to go back in. They'll go out and they'll commit another petty crime just so they can get caught and go back in the institution, because at least they get food and they have their friends. They know what time it is. And so this is a conditional life. And I become so habituated to the process of birth, death, old age, and disease, I just accept it. So then somebody comes along and says, no, no, there's a whole other world. There's a world of light. Parastasmatu bhavo nyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana. Maksaksar vishubhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. Everything around us is crumbling and changing, and whatever I had is dwindling, going away. But someone says there's another world where all these things don't happen, where it's eternally manifest. Shrivas?
I had a question.
Question from the pundit.
Prabhuji, what is your spiritual perspective on those who change careers? Is that something which they are trying to... I mean, is that they are just going along the modes of nature, or is the... What is the spiritual perspective on those who are changing careers, or who just go willy-nilly do stuff, something like that?
Well, everyone has to... maintain themselves. Kamasya nendriya pritir labo jivete yavata jivasya tatva jignasya narto yascheha karmabhi. Life's desire should never be aimed at gratifying the senses. One should live a life of self-preservation so that you can inquire about the Supreme Absolute Truth. So whatever change you make, whether it's moving from one place to the next, one job to the next, changing careers. The consideration should be, how will this align me with my ability to inquire about the Supreme Absolute Truth? And if that lines up, then it'll be auspicious. So sometimes you have to reposition yourself in this world. Sometimes Krishna pushes you along in certain ways. But, you know, quota means also that people have different capacities to live in this world, and sense gratification is like salt. You don't want too much or too little. You have to have a balance so that you can maintain yourself. Some people need more and some people need less. Some people have a nature which is prone to be more renounced and frugal, and other people need a little bit more. But whatever situation you're in, it should be utilized in order that you can keep the vibration going, the spiritual vibration. If you do that, everything becomes dovetailed and purified. Shouldn't be a problem. Kurvan eviha karmani, this is the verse. Jijivishek shatam samaha. The words meanings are, again, so meditate deeply on this verse. Thing is about verses, you can take it and just make it the center of your meditation. Take it wherever you go, look at the world in perspective through the lens of this verse. Kurvan, doing continuously, eva, thus, iha, during this life, the span of life. I mean, just that word itself, that phrase, during this span of life. Now, Chanakya Pandit says that if you want to think like a transcendentalist, you should think that I can die at any moment. If you want to think like a materialist, you should think I'm going to live forever. Simple equation. So, iha, we have a span of life. Kurvan eviha karmani. So, during this span of life, time management's all about the fact that we have a limited amount of time. If we had an unlimited amount of time, you wouldn't have to manage your time at all. But when you have a limited amount of time, that's when you have to manage it and you have to prioritize. So this verse says, Kurvan eviha karmani iha. In this span of life that we have right now, what are you going to do with it? And the suggestion is being given to us. Kurvaneviha karmani jijivishekshatam samaha. Jijivishet means one should desire to live. Shatam, 100, that means the full span of life. Shama, years. Avam, so living, twai, unto you. Na, no. Anyata, alternative, ita, from this path, asti. There is na, not karma, work. Lipyate, can be bound, nare, a man. So you can live this full span of life without becoming bound up by the law of karma. And how do you do it? By following what has just been given to us in the previous verse. Isavasam idam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat. Tena tyaktena bunjita magridha kasasudanam. That everything animate or inanimate is controlled and owned by the Lord. Doesn't that change the equation of everything? If you have a house and there's a boundary line between one person and the next, there's all kinds of blueprints that you have to go by. The earth is all divided up. There are geographical lines everywhere. Everyone thinks this is my town, this is my state. It's all arbitrary. And it's all been stolen. The whole idea is that everyone's exploiting it and taking it from the Supreme. But if it's utilized, everyone sees that it's controlled and owned by the Lord and uses it in the service of Vishnu, then it doesn't bind us to this material world. So there were a couple verses also from the purport, Hare Krishna, that we can look up with great profit. And those are mentioned 3, 9 through 16 in the Gita. Page 154. I'll say, please repeat. Jagnar tat kamano nyatra. Loko yang karma bandanaha. Tadartam karma kaunteya. Muktasanga samachara. Jagna artat. Done only for the sake of yagya. Or Vishnu. Karmanaha. Then work. Anyatra, otherwise. Loka, world. Ayam, this. Karma bandhanaha, bondage by work. Tat, of him. Artam, for the sake. Karma, work. Kaunteya, O son of Kunti. Muktasanga, liberated from association. Samachara, do perfectly. Translation, work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in this way you will always remain free from bondage. Very similar to the Ishapanishad verse, isn't it? Here's the purport. Since one has to work even for the simple maintenance of the body, the prescribed duties for a particular social position and quality are so made that purpose can be fulfilled. Yajna means Lord Vishnu, or sacrificial performances. All sacrificial performances are also meant for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. The Vedas enjoin Yajna Vai Vishnu. In other words, the same purpose is served whether one performs prescribed yajnas or directly serves Lord Vishnu. Krishna consciousness is therefore performance of yajna as it is prescribed in this verse. The Varnashram institution also aims at satisfying Lord Vishnu. Varnashrama charavata purushena parapuman Vishnu aradyate Vishnu Purana 388. Therefore, one has to work for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Any other work done in this material world will be a cause of bondage, for both good and evil work have their reactions, and any reaction binds the performer. Therefore, one has to work in Krishna consciousness to satisfy Krishna or Vishnu. And while performing such activities, one is in a liberated stage. This is the great art of doing work. And in the beginning, this process requires very expert guidance. One should therefore act very diligently under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna, or under the direct instruction of Lord Krishna himself, under whom Arjuna had the opportunity to work. Nothing should be performed for sense gratification, but everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. This practice will not only save one from the reaction of work, but also gradually elevate one to the transcendental loving service of the Lord, which alone can raise one to the kingdom of God. So, oftentimes, people have mistaken Krishna consciousness to be about renunciation. And sometimes when people first came to Krishna consciousness, they thought they would just renounce everything. And then Prabhupada engaged them in work. And, for instance, some of the devotees who first came, they thought, well, I'll quit my job and just hang around and be spiritual. And Prabhupada said, no, keep your job. And they were shocked. But how's that spiritual? I'm working. I'm out in the world. And Prabhupada said, give the money. Do keep your job. We're starting a movement to spread Krishna consciousness all over America, then all over the world. And we need help. So he said, keep your job. Be a social worker. Drive a cab. It's spiritual. That's spiritual. You're engaging. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira nikila api avastasu jivan mukta su uchite. This is a description of a liberated soul, and it's not someone who sits down and does nothing. The Prabhupada points out that when Krishna gave Arjuna instruction before the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he didn't tell him that he could sit down and smoke ganja and that Krishna would fight the war for him. He told Arjuna to fight. That's spiritual. A lot of people in the 60s, especially, and still today, they say, what's with the Bhagavad Gita? I thought spiritual life was all about peace and harmony, and you guys have a book that's taking place on a battlefield. To show this extreme case that work for Krishna, directly to please Krishna, is spiritual. So if whatever you do, wherever you are, if you connect that to Krishna and you give the result of that work to Krishna, it spiritualizes the work. It's a sacrifice for Vishnu. So even if you're working in a factory, it doesn't matter. If it's connected to Krishna, that becomes a sacrifice. It becomes spiritual. Spiritual doesn't mean you run off to the forest with a begging bowl, unless that's your particular prescribed duty. What do you think? Comments?
I have
comments. Please.
Jai Padmanabha. I was thinking about what you said as far as Prabhupada said devotees should keep their job in the beginning. So I'm thinking that, God, if there was everyone that's working now, if it was like it was back then, and everyone was giving 100% of their paychecks, or at least, 75 or 80%, how good this movement would be going right now. Speaking for myself, too. I'm not giving much. So I wonder how, there's so many Indians who are in this movement now that weren't back, 30, 40 years ago, who are making good money. And I'm, wondering if we were, if we started telling the truth like you are now. I think I've noticed you progress over the years and you're starting to be more bold, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean progress spiritually because you've always been spiritually strong, but telling it like it is, and I'm thinking, wow, if everyone was preaching, all the leaders of the movement were preaching that, look, like you're saying about the salt, that's what I'm going to take from this, by the way. I thought that was a very good example. So we're talking about what's our quota, so it's like... You know, if you're making $150,000 a year, you know, I'm living on about 25. So you would think that there's some out here that maybe can live on, you know, 35 or 40 and can give $110,000 a year from their wages. And that would be pure devotional service. I mean, that would be big-time devotional service, you know, rather than giving $50 a month or $100 a month. And I'm wondering if the leaders in our movement shouldn't be pushing that more, you know.
Well, you can't push something faster than you're not going yourself. It's a law of thermodynamics. That's one thing. And another thing is that Krishna doesn't see how much we give as much as he sees how much we hold back. And those who learn the art of giving feel they experience for themselves when they give in that realm of making a sacrifice. Sacrifice doesn't mean that you give away what you don't need. Once somebody had given something in charity to the temple, I think it was a mudanga or something, and it was broken, and Prabhupada said, "This is Kali Yuga charity." People get whatever's broken, they say, "I'll give it to Krishna." And he told about Gopala Ban, who was a rascal, and he was in the field one day with his friends, and they were complaining. They said, "Gopala Ban, you're such an atheist. You're such a rascal. You never give anything to God." And he was carrying a big tray of grains back from the field, and a big wind came just then and blew them all over the place. And he said, "No, not true. I offer that to Krishna," as it was blowing away anyway. So not that kind of thing. But those who do find the place they can give where there's a little bit of pain. Not that you give away everything, because we see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Shivananda Sen to go take care of Vasudev Dutta. Because Vasudev Dutta was a householder, he had a family to maintain, and he gave away everything. Every time there was an opportunity, he would give away his income, and he wasn't saving anything or taking care of his family, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "This is not good. He has to maintain his family." So he told Shivananda Sen, who was a very organized person, he said, "Go help him organize so that, you know, he can do both." So we have to find, you know, that balance. Prabhupada did have householders in the beginning. He would ask 50%. And then he also told us that Rupa Goswami set the example that he gave 50% of his income for Krishna consciousness, 25% he set aside for emergencies. Lucky thing, because that got Sanat Goswami out of jail. And 25%, when he renounced, he gave for his family, so that they could go on living. Prabhupada did the same thing. When he took the renounced order of life, of course, he didn't have anything when he left. But later on, when he had something, he made sure that his family had a lifetime income. This is proper. Rupa Goswami did the same thing. He went back and organized for over a whole year. It took him to actually organize his affairs so that everyone was taken care of. Srila Prabhupada also speaks about those who take the renounced order of life. I know this isn't exactly what you're talking about, but it's in the same neighborhood. He said taking the renounced order of life, and then they take everything they've earned during their life and they leave it to their family. He said this is not real renunciation. He said that you should leave a portion to your family, but the other proportion, 50% at least, should go for Krishna consciousness. You give it to Krishna. So there are prescribed methods for renouncing one's income and at the same time staying balanced. And those who do that find that they make advancement in spiritual life, because we're bound up in the material world by the laws of material nature and our attachment to various things. There's a verse in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Could you grab a 10th canto, chapter 14? I think I can remember the verse. It was spoken by Shukadeva Dev Goswami. He said, "Tavat ragadayastena, tavat kara graham graham, tavan grihanga nrigado yavat krishna natejanaha. And he says that, thank you, can you look up tavat ragadayastenas in the index? Tavat ragadayastenas. Give it to Srivas Pandit. He'll Tavat ragadayastenas. This verse points out, this is a very powerful verse for what we're talking about. Tavat ragadayastenas. Tavat kara graham graham. Graham graham means graham means a prison. So atavat means until that time. And the last verse reveals what it means by until what time. Yavat Krishna Natejana, until you're a devotee of Krishna. In other words, until your heart you're doing everything for Krishna and everything's dedicated to Krishna in your life. Yavat Krishna Tatejanaha. Tavat. Until that time, did you find it? Should be the 14th chapter. Tavad ragadaya stena. Stena means a thief. So it means that your desires are all thieves. And your family members, let's see, and your house is like a prison. And all your possessions are like foot shackles. Scary. All your possessions are foot shackles. Your house is a prison. And all your desires and family members are like thieves. I think it's family members or desires. Did you find it?
No, actually.
Yeah. Tavat ragadayastenas. It has to have the 14th chapter in it. Oh, that's why you can't find it. So until that time, when one is situated in as Krishna's devotee, then all those things can be used in Krishna's service. And look at the residents of Vrindavan. They all live in houses. They're not all sannyasis. They're family people. They're all grahastas, and there are a few sannyasis in the Leela, but most in Goloka Vrindavan, Gokula Vrindavan, they have their cows, they have their house. Go ahead.
Tavad raga dayastenas, tavad kara griham griham, tavan mohungri nigado, yavat Krishna natejanaha. Translation, my dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles.
Any purport?
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta
Swami. By the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Apparently, the residents of Vrindavan, the abode of Lord Krishna, are simple householders engaged in ordinary affairs such as herding cows, cooking, rearing children, and performing religious ceremonies. However, all these activities are intensely engaged in the loving service of Lord Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan perform all activities in pure Krishna consciousness and thus exist on the most exalted platform of liberated life. Otherwise, the same activities performed without Krishna consciousness constitute ordinary bondage to the material world. Thus, one should not misunderstand the exalted position of the residents of Vrindavan, nor one should consider oneself highly religious simply because one performs ordinary domestic affairs very enthusiastically but without Krishna consciousness. By focusing our passionate attachment on our family and society, we are completely deviated from the progressive path of Krishna consciousness. Conversely, if we engage our family in the loving service of the Lord, our endeavors to maintain our family becomes part and parcel of our progressive spiritual duties. In conclusion, by studying the extraordinary status of the residents of Vrindavan, we can see that the essential quality of their lives is pure Krishna consciousness. the rendering of loving service to Lord without any trace of material desire or mental speculation. Such loving service to original personality of Godhead immediately creates the atmosphere of Sri Vrindavan Dham, the kingdom of God.
So real happiness comes by engagement in Krishna consciousness. Unless we have a haituki apratiyata, unmotivated, uninterrupted service to Krishna, we won't feel satisfaction of the soul. We won't feel real satisfaction. So we are being robbed of that opportunity by all kinds of material desires and possessions unless they're fully engaged in Krishna's service. Fully engaged. Everything else is what we call kaitava, cheating. Who are you cheating? What did your teacher tell you in school if you ever cheated? Of course, none of you ever did, but I heard it all the time. But who are you cheating?
Yourself.
Cheat yourself, right? So you're cheating yourself out of actually real happiness if you don't serve Krishna. Dharma projita kaitavo traparamonima saranam satam. And so we have to give everything to Krishna. Everything should be given to Krishna and everything should be centered around Krishna. Then we can be happy. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. You live just like a lotus flower that grows in the water and it never gets touched by the water. Kaina manasa buddhya kevala indriya rapi. The yogis, they act with all the senses and even with the mind only for the purpose of purification. Kaina manasa buddhya kevala indriya rapi. All the senses and even the mind are used to purify oneself. So everything can be used for Krishna and should be used in his service. And so if you give to Krishna, then he reciprocates. And it's up to you. Yeyata mam prapadyante. Satyadev Prabhu and I were talking about this on the way down, about independent, spontaneous, individual, spontaneous, and voluntary service. It's voluntary. And it's individual. And that's the nature of the soul, Satya was saying, that the soul is a unit of free will. That's what you have. You have free will. So you can actually decide to do these things. And it's important to be around good association, to hear the good vibration, to surrender to Krishna, surrender to Krishna, surrender to Krishna. Because then as we act in that way, we'll experience for ourselves Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Janayat yashu vairagyam jnanam chayara haitukam. By rendering service to Krishna, one feels causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So we're meditating on the verse from the Sri Upanishad, which can shape our lives, shape our days. This Ishtavasya spirit. Remember that Krishna is the controller and owner of everything. And we've been directed by Srila Prabhupada in the purport to read a few verses from the Bhagavad Gita. And now we're on page 710. Thank you for coming. Hare Krishna. This is text number 10 in the... I'm looking at the 18th chapter. Actually, that reminds me. I want to read you something from the 18th chapter. This is 18th chapter, page 711. Krishna says, Nahi deha pritashakyam taktum karma nyasheshita yastu karma palatyagi satyagit yabadiyate. It is indeed impossible for an embodied being to give up all activities. But he who renounces the fruits of action is called one who has truly renounced. Purport. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that one can never give up work at any time. Therefore, he who works for Krishna and does not enjoy the fruit of results, who offers everything to Krishna, is actually a renouncer. There are many members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness who work very hard in their office or in the factory or some other place, and whatever they earn, they give to the society. Such highly elevated souls are actually sannyasis and are situated in the renounced order of life. It is clearly outlined here how to renounce the fruits of work and for what purpose fruits should be renounced. So a sannyasi strictly means someone who wears saffron cloth and carries a stick. True or false? A sannyasi can be a householder living in a house. True or false? False. Okay, take 5 points off from Virendra Kumar. I'll read this again. There are many members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness who work very hard in their office or in the factory or some other place, and whatever they earn, they give to the society. Such elevated souls are actually sannyasis and are situated in the renounced order of life. It doesn't say they live in a house. So we'll only take 2.5 points off. But point is here, sannyasi means, sannyas means someone who knows how to engage everything in Krishna's service. Sarvabhuteya shuya pashyad bhagavat bhavamatmanaha bhutani bhagavat yatmani esha bhagavatotamaha. The uttama bhakta is someone who sees everything in relationship to Krishna and engages it in his service. Nothing on the side. One for Krishna, 5 for me. I'll give him his little thing just as long as I get to keep all my stuff. Or worshiping Krishna, keep him in a little box. When the box is open, devotional service, the box is closed, I do whatever the hell I want. So Krishna sees what we keep back. Yeyata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. Whatever we keep back, he can see that. He knows. So sincerity means that I reveal my soul. I'm honest. Honestly asking Krishna to allow me to serve him without holding back. And therefore, Krishna is called Bhavagrahi Janardana. Can I have that book? Bhavagrahi Janardana from the pastime of Bali Maharaj. Can you find that in a flash? That section speaks about how Bali Maharaj had a desire in his heart to serve Urukram, Lord Vamandev. And Vamanadeva knew it. And later on, after Vamanadeva had taken everything away from Bali Maharaj, Bali was rewarded by the Supreme Lord in ways that the demigods thought were amazing. They couldn't imagine how this had taken place. And it's described that it's because of what was in his heart that he actually had the sincerity of heart, that he wanted to surrender everything. Bhava Grahi Janardana. He knows your bhava. He knows what's in your heart. Of course, that can be also, it becomes manifest outwardly, whatever's in my heart. I can say, well, I love Krishna, but, he knows, therefore it's okay that I smoke cigarette or I, keep everything because he knows actually what I really mean. Really intend to do. Can you find it? Okay. We need a Veda base. You have? Just look up Bhavagrahi Janardana. Comments? Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
I just wanted to mention this, that aside from the quantity that is involved in giving, is it the quantity that is so much important, because Krishna is also looking for the love and devotion with which one is giving to him. So when we say one is working, then one gives to Krishna what has one earned, which is fine, but there is also the quality with which one is giving. Like he says, give me a leaf, a fruit, or a flower, and I'll accept it if you are giving it with love and devotion. And also, whatever is it that you do, you do it as an offering for me. And there is some bhava component of bhav involved in that offering. So we would also look at the quality with which one is giving, not just the quantity. That component would also be there, wouldn't it? When one is offering. And also in some of Prabhupada's verses, there was this thing about giving where he refers to one is working in the material world, one is earning, and whatever surpluses are there, one gives it to Krishna. There is also that reference in some purport where he refers to surplus. One has accumulated some money, it's extra for them, one gives it to Krishna. So there is both quantity, there would be quantity, but there is also quality of the giving that would come into play from what Krishna says.
Yeah, the quality is always there. When it comes to... the formula is Ahai Tukiya Pratiyata, unmotivated, uninterrupted. And our my accumulation, whatever it is, if I'm using everything in service of Krishna, Krishna's the center of everything. For instance, you may have a big house, but then you convert it into a book room. You know, you may have a jumbo garage in your house that can fit two cars. Well, your house can only fit one car. But say that you turn that into the a Sankirtan Central, and you say that this is it's not a garage anymore, it's a book room. You're using it for Krishna. And then all the kids are engaged in, they're using their skills that they're learning at school to keep track of how many books are being distributed. Then the household becomes centered around Krishna. Krishna wants us to give everything. Manasa deha geho yo kichimor. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings that my mind, my body, my family, and ultimately myself, I give everything to Krishna. When I'm holding back something, that it's weighing me down in my service to Krishna. Symbolically, I told a story the other night about Sanatan Goswami. He was a very wealthy person. And again, I'm not talking about how Krishna consciousness is just about renunciation. I'm talking about, it is the quality of one's devotion. And that means different things to different people. Because if one's a sannyasi, he has a begging bowl also. He has that. He has to go and beg something. A householder does it in a different way. But again, Krishna sees what you're holding back. Sanatan Goswami, when he finally left the hilly tract of land, he left his servant behind. All his money was expended. He had nothing. He was only on foot. Every time I read that section and I hear how joyous he felt, suddenly he felt ecstasy in his heart. He's going to Lord Chaitanya and everything else is behind him. The burden is lifted. So according to what we heard in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, tavat ragadayastenas tavat kara graham graham tara moham nigado yavat Krishna natejanaha. Until one's using everything for Krishna, whatever we have, whatever possessions we have, they're like foot shackles, and our house becomes a prison. So it is quality. It's the quality is transformed when it's used for Krishna. So if we're whatever we're holding, whatever it is, the material body and all our possessions, everything that we have, whatever percentage we're holding back from Krishna becomes a burden. That's all. It just becomes a burden. So it's liberating to be able to use whatever we have in Krishna's service. Iha yasya harer dasye. That includes iha in this world. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira. Our work should be used for Krishna. Manasa, our mind. Gira, our words. In such a state, nikila api avastastu. Everything's being used. Jivan mukta savichite. You're a liberated soul. Liberated soul. So, you know, we have to see what it is. Yeah, quality has to be there. You know, it's hard to tell externally. You can't judge. It's not about renunciation. There are people who do all kinds of crazy renunciation, like Hiranyakashipu. Nobody could renounce like he did. He stood on his tippy toes for thousands of years until fire was coming out of his head. And what was in his heart? What was in his heart? He wanted to dominate the universe. He wanted to, and he ended up trying to kill his saintly son. That's what was in his heart. So just because of external renunciation, someone may say, oh, that person, you know, like there was some guy who ate a whole Volkswagen or something, some yogi, piece by piece. And there's some other yogi I used to see all the time in Vrindavan. He stood up for like 20, 30 years. He never sat down. And people would come by and throw money at him. And then there would be he had disciples and there were other people standing there. But what's in the heart? That's what is the quality. Hiranyakashipu had only a desire to dominate material nature. Whereas Pundarik Vidyaniti appeared to be a materialist. Ramananda Roy appeared to be a materialist. He was a governor. And he was carried on a palanquin. But when Lord Chaitanya saw him, he went and embraced him and went into ecstasy from embracing Ramananda Roy because he knew this, here's a pure devotee. And Pundarik Vidyaniti, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was calling out, oh, Pundarik, Pundarik. And no one knew who Pundarik was at the time. So they're all wondering, who's this Pundarik? Is that another name for God? And they were wondering, who's Pundarik? And Pundarik Vidyaniti was known by Mukunda. Sri Mukunda went to Gadadhar, who was a simple pure devotee from the very beginning of his life, and he told him one day, you want to see an elevated devotee on the topmost platform of bhakti? And Gadadhar Pandit said, yes, of course, please take me right away. So Mukunda said, come with me. He brought him to this opulent house near town and went inside the house and found all the most opulent accoutrements throughout the house. And he took him up to the room where Pundarik Vidyaniti was reclined on the bed with beautiful curly black hair oiled with the most expensive scented oil. Fine silken cloths and jewelry adorned his body. He was being fanned by a servant. And in that atmosphere, Gadadhar Pandit, simple, pure devotee, looked and he thought, this is a pure devotee? Mukunda understood his mentality, so he recited a verse out loud in front of Pundarik Vidyaniti. He said, Aho bhakiyam stanaka lukutam. This is the beginning to the verse which is given in by Uddhava in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which he says, oh, this is a lament of ecstasy. How could anyone surrender to anyone else but Krishna? Who is more merciful in this world? Because Putana came to Krishna when he was just 3 months old, and Putana wanted to kill Krishna by smearing poison on her breast. And yet Krishna gave her the highest benediction, said, okay, you're my mother. Who would surrender to anybody else but this? This is the verse full of this bhav. And when Pundarik Vidyaniti heard this verse, he transformed. His body began shaking. Tears were flowing from his eyes like waves. He began thrashing. The beautiful bedstead he was on, the expensive sheets were thrown all over the room. The candelabra, all the pottery, everything in the room was smashed by his flailing arms. He went into this ecstatic state of ecstasy in love for Krishna. And servants ran in to try to restrain him, and for hours they couldn't hold him down. Finally, he went into a state of trance, not moving for hours. Meanwhile, Gadadhar Pandit was observing this, and he thought within himself, I've committed an offense to a pure devotee. In my mind, I made an offense to a devotee, thinking, who is this materialist, judging from the external point of view. Therefore, on the way home, Gadadhar Pandit said to Mukunda, I offended a pure devotee, and there's only one way to rectify it. I must take initiation from him. So Mukunda said, let's take the matter to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mukunda said, Gadadhar Pandit had this experience. He wants to surrender and take initiation from Pundarik Vidyaniti. Mahaprabhu said, do it quickly. And he did. He took initiation. He was the disciple of Pundarik Vidyaniti after that, to alleviate his offense, and because he was attracted to this topmost Vaishnav. So this story is given to show that we may not understand. Vaishnav's not understandable by normal terms. It's not just somebody wearing a certain kind of cloth. It's the heart of a Vaishnav is very difficult to understand, but we can see that their only business in life is Krishna. Their body is made of prasadam. When you see a Vaishnav, this is given everything to Krishna. The body is transformed. There's nothing held back. It's all for Krishna's service. So in our regulated life of devotional service, as we're making advancement towards the position of love of God, we follow these prescriptions, how to use everything more and more in Krishna's service, whatever we have. And at different stages of life, it'll be different. You know, for the student, when you're just young and you can survive by, you know, running around the world and barely sleeping and sleeping on floors and whatever and in the forest, it may be easy for somebody to live a brahmachari life. Later on, there are different stages of life. So at different stages of life, one can live as a brahmachari and be renounced and be using everything in Krishna's service according to that person's station in life. Someone can be a grihastha and use everything in Krishna's service. And did we find the verse? Is it here in my hand?
It's textual problem. It's in the purport, though.
Yeah, it's in the purport. That's right. That's why we gave it to you. This is Shibaliruvacha. Ho prama maya krita samudama prapana bhaktarta vidau samahita yalo kapalais twananugraho marar alabda purvo pasade sura pita. Bali Maharaj said, by the way, we're on Canto 8, Chapter 23, Text 2. What a wonderful effect there is in even attempting to offer respectful obeisances to you. I merely endeavored to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless the attempt was as successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown me, a fallen demon, was never achieved even by the demigods or the leaders of various planets. Srila Prabhupada's purport. When Vamanadeva appeared before Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj immediately wanted to offer him obeisances, but he was unable to do so because of the presence of Shukracharya and other demoniac associates. The Lord is so merciful, however, that although Bali Maharaj did not actually offer obeisances, but only endeavored to do so within his mind, the Supreme Personality of God had blessed him with more mercy than even the demigods could ever expect. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 2:40, Svalpamapya Siddharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayat, even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. The Supreme Personality of God is known as Bhava Grahi Janardana, because he takes only the essence of a devotee's attitude. If a devotee sincerely surrenders, the Lord as the supersoul in everyone's heart immediately understands this. Thus, even though externally a devotee may not render full service, if he is internally sincere and serious, the Lord welcomes his service nonetheless. Thus, the Lord is known as Bhavagrahi Janardana because he takes the essence of one's devotional mentality. You can live on the end of the earth. You can live in Iceland in a little hut and be outside the mainstream. And you can sit in your little room and pray to the Lord for his assistance in advancing in devotional service, and everything will come to you. He'll arrange everything. He's in every atom. He knows everyone's heart. He knows the sincerity of the person who's making the prayer. And he arranges for everyone according to their desire. We have the eternal option to surrender to Krishna within our heart. And that's what he sees. So it's not necessarily how much we have or what station of life we're in. It's the quality. It's the quality of what's in our heart, how we're using it in Krishna's service. That will be manifest outwardly, and other people will see it. Krishna will certainly see it. In Srivasangam, I've told the story before, but it fits here well. During the Mahaprakash, it was 21 hours when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finally, unabashedly revealed to all his devotees and associates that, yes, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Before, he was hiding it through Yoga Maya, and sometimes he'd show it, and sometimes he'd retract it. Sometimes he would chastise the devotees, and other times he would be taking the dust from their feet. But this time, when he was at Srivasangam, he actually sat down on the throne of Vishnu and accepted worship as the Supreme Personality of God. During that time, devotees were coming from everywhere to offer him abhishek. And that required many, many jugs of Ganges water. And in the throng of devotees, there was one devotee at the back who was unseen by anyone, who was collecting the Ganges water in these pots and neatly placing it in a systematic way so that the other devotees could easily get it and do their service. But she was staying back. And out of all the devotees who were coming forward, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu noticed the service of this one person at the very back who was providing the water pots. And he picked her out and he asked, "Who is this bringing the water pots?" And Srivas Thakur said, "This is our servant in our house. Her name is Dukhi." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu renamed her Sukhi. And the significant point is that you may think your service is unseen, that you're at the back. You may think I'm not being recognized, or whatever you think. Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janarda. He recognizes what's in your heart. You can be the front person, but if you have something rotten in your heart, it will come out. It will be revealed. Krishna will put you in a situation where you'll be humiliated so that you can come to your senses. He does it all the time. It's his mercy. And if we're completely sincere, no matter where we are, whatever situation of life we're in right now, Krishna knows. And that is the essential aspect of advancing in devotional service. It emanates from the core of one's heart. Satyadev Prabhu was telling me yesterday about how there's a physiological research center down south. Where is it?
Boulder Creek.
And it's called HeartMath. And they're doing studies about the physiological nature of the body. And one of them is about how the... You want to just tell it?
It's just a connection.
Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, I spoke about it a little bit last week.
Oh, did you? Okay. Sorry.
They're just researching for the last 20 years in connection with other research centers. They've been researching the connection of the heart to the brain. And actually, they've discovered that the heart actually has its own brain. And the heart, it has neurological cells, and it also has cells that produce hormones and neurotransmitters that not only communicate with the brain but also communicate with the rest of the body. And actually the first organ that develops even before the fetus is the heart. And they don't know when or how the heart begins to electrically produce its own contractions, but it does, and then the rest of the body develops, and the brain, the heart actually controls the brain in a lot of ways and a lot of different functions, and so it's actually the center of consciousness, and also it produces an electrical magnetic wave that's 1,000 times stronger. The brain's always already producing electrical magnetic waves, right? You can measure that as an EEG. And then the heart electromagnetic rhythm is an EKG. And that actually can be measured outside the body by special instruments. And it's 1,000 times stronger than the brain itself. And so when our heart and when our emotions are what they call in a coherent mode, that vibration is particularly strong. Coherent meaning that when we're having feelings of love and compassion and kindness and generosity and forgiveness, this produces a very cohesive rhythm that's very powerful. And when we're holding thoughts that are angry or lusty or sad or needy, then the rhythm is actually very incoherent and actually the heart at that time, and we can feel it, is in a constricted mode. So when we're feeling thoughts of anger or neediness or sadness, we can feel a constriction. Everything feels tight. Everything's down. And when we're feeling forgiveness, or we're feeling enthusiastic, or we're feeling courageous, there's an expansive feeling. And so when the heart is actually cohesive, we can notice that as an expansive feeling. And when the heart vibration is incoherent, we'll notice that as a constriction, like that.
So how expansive is it? The heart, which is immersed in prema, or pure love for Krishna, is so expansive that the electromagnetic force, whatever force is coming out of that, conquers Krishna. He is the unconquerable, but he becomes conquered by that kind of love.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. I was just listening to this. I remembered last week during the 6-week Bhagavad Gita course, Vanali Krishna Prabhu was mentioning about a devotee. This devotee, I mean, the doctors mentioned that the devotee is brain dead. You know, she was in her last stages and just the heart was beating. But then he called some of the devotees from the Pune temple and said that we're going to chant for her anyway, you know. So everybody was chanting. And the doctors declared that there was no other, whatever, the ECG, nothing was going on with the brain. So, and then they started chanting. And just a few minutes before she left her body, she opened her eyes and she looked at all the devotees and she thanked them for, you know, chanting. And she looked at Gornitai and she smiled and she passed away. So we were having a discussion that when the brain is dead, then, so I'm trying to correlate between that and what you just now said, that now that modern science is also recognizing that there is a brain cell, you know, kind of neurons even in the heart area. So she was able to use that intelligence probably to, you know, thank everybody and look at Gornitai, smile and feel happy and pass away. Thank you.
So one thing is to chant from the heart, not lip deep, but heart deep. And that's, this is quality. We should chant from the heart. We should give from the heart. We should express ourselves to Krishna from the heart. And that's That's what Krishna listens to, is the sincerity of purpose of the devotee from within the heart. And even if externally you don't get it right, it's not a big deal. Whereas you can do everything right externally, have all the rituals down, but if you have some other motive in your heart, like you're thinking something, you want something in return for yourself, even though it looks like you're a smooth performer of rituals or whatever you're doing, then it's not as pleasing to Krishna, is the essential point. So our real sacrifice, we're talking about sacrificing to Krishna, means that we should give ourself. You know, when we do this fire yajna and we're doing swaha, we're throwing little grains, we should throw ourselves. That's what it means, really, doing a token, like here's a little grain. Krishna needs a little grain, or he needs a little water from the Ganga. When you're in the middle of the Ganga, here, please take this, or you're offering back. But what we're really offering is ourself. Swaha, we should give ourself. That is satisfaction. That is sacrifice. To give our very soul and say, you know, Krishna, I give you everything, give myself. That's quality. And to the degree that I don't give that, then I won't feel satisfied. There's no satisfaction. This is the only positive state for the soul in any of the three worlds. Yene ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavad avashuddha bhudaya aruya krishnena paramparam tata patantyato nadrita yushmarangraya. Until you attain this positive state of surrender to Krishna, of surrendering the soul to Krishna, which is complete satisfaction, that whatever position, whatever positive position you may have attained in this world, it won't be enough to keep you there eternally. Sometime or other you're going to fall down because it's not going to satisfy the self. It has to be there, the personal connection with Krishna in full self-surrender. And that's our relationship with Krishna, to surrender everything. Ramananda?
A question. Normally when IKM or anyone comes to the devotional service, during the initial period of time, there is a good amount of progress. But after some months, or maybe after some years, it appears as if everything is going slow, or there no further progress, or there could be even some regression in the devotional service activities. So how can we move forward from that point?
When you're going to the Himalaya and you're going for the top peak, which is the, what is it called? Mount Everest. On your way there, you're going to go up and down because you're driving in the foothills and they roll. And go, you know, just climbing up to that peak, you're going to have ups and downs. And that is not necessarily when you feel that you're going down. If you're, well, I could say that failure can be the pillar to success, because devotional service is so positive. Krishna is so appreciative of the endeavor in devotional service that even if you don't make it, or even if there is some slip, Krishna makes the best of it and he rectifies it. And in some cases, as Prabhupada mentions in the light of the Bhagavat, failure can be the pillar to success. Sometimes stagnation period means that it's darkest before the dawn, and it's a period of time when you feel so frustrated that you're not making advancement that then your intense desire comes back. In the beginning, you may get what we call a free sample because you need one. In the very beginning, Krishna can give you some kind of a shadow attachment, or he can give you an impetus. Here's a taste of what it can be like. And then in your hard work, as you struggle through and you find the peaks and valleys and even the times when you feel that you're struggling, those, as you continue forward, an attitude is all important. This was in the purport here, and Prabhupada mentions it at the beginning of the Nectar of Instruction, that attitude is all important in advancing in devotional service, right? You know that from the preface, because it was one of the questions on your Bhakti Shastri exam. So if you keep the right attitude as you go through that, it will be a source of maturity. In other words, it will make you mature in devotional service because you know the different aspects of struggle and taste as you go forward. It's natural, and we see again from the lifetime of Narada Muni how he started off and got an unimaginable taste given to him directly from Krishna. Krishna revealed himself, and he experienced his spiritual senses. No doubt about it, he was floating in an ocean of bliss, and each one of his senses were spontaneously enlivened in devotional service. He was smelling Krishna, touching Krishna, seeing Krishna, all of his senses, spiritual senses awakened, and then he was plunged back into his material body, and the experience of was overwhelmingly painful coming back into this world and being separated from Krishna. And then mechanically he tried to get it back. And then Krishna said that those who are imperfect can't see me in this lifetime. He had to work for it. He said, you're a ku yogi. You're attached to the mode of goodness. So we should go on with our devotional service. Ashlishiva paravatam pinashtumam adarshanam marma hatam kurotuva. Even if you don't get the darshan, you should go on with the attitude that no matter what, I'm going to continue with my devotional service. And in that, there's a taste of that determination to go on, even when you're not getting a taste. In that very second that you decide that, Krishna, I'm going on, even though you won't give me a taste, even though you won't reveal yourself to me, you decide I'm going on anyway, then you'll get a taste. And you continue on. Satya?
Sometimes people would ask Srila Prabhupada, how do I know if I'm advancing in devotional service? You know, what are the markers? How do I know? And he would answer with the verse, Bhakti Parisha Anubhava Virektira Anyatra Chaisha Trika Ekakala Papadyamanashyan Yatashnatashu Tushti Pushti Shudapaya Nugasam. And the verse says, I think, is it from the 10th canto or 11th canto? The Nava Yogendras are speaking?
Yeah.
And the verse is that when one surrenders to Krishna, when one surrenders to Krishna, three things automatically begin to happen. Things that we don't really have to independently endeavor for, but automatically begin to happen. We become detached from the material world. We have a personal experience of Ishwara, and a love arises in our heart. So this is the result of when we actually surrender to Krishna. And it's compared to when we eat. When we begin to eat, no one has to tell us that we're full. As soon as we begin to eat, three things begin to happen. We feel nourishment. The pain of hunger begins to go away. And we become satisfied. We feel happy. So advancement really is a personal experience. And so we have to determine by our personal experience if I'm making advancement or not. And if we're not feeling that satisfaction, and if we're not feeling the detachment, and if we're not feeling the love, then we have to honestly examine, you know, our practice, and then inquire from the spiritual master and from advanced devotees, and find out from them maybe where we need to adjust you know, because it's easy to, when we first begin, and Srila Viswanath Chakravarti, he talks about this in the Mandurya Kadambini, that in the beginning of devotional service, we naturally feel this enthusiasm, but it's more of a mental enthusiasm. And actually, when we're learning so many things, new things, we can even become puffed up by that and now think we've become advanced. We can quote this verse or that verse and, yeah, my mind's got this whole philosophy locked down. I know all about it. I can tell somebody else about it. But this is kind of, it's actually all in the mental platform. Our relationship, you know, with ourself and with Krishna is really, it's not experienced in the mind or in the intellect. It's experienced in the soul. And so the first experience we'll generally have is that we're not this body and we're not the mind. And on a morning walk, Prabhupada was comparing this to a taste. So when you've gotten at least this inner experience, that you're not the mind, you're not the body, and that you're the spirit soul, that's enough really to keep you going, you know, through to nishta and then to the higher stages of bhakti. So sometimes it's explained that this climbing this mountain to Mount Everest, you know, the top is prema, but we just, you know, our interim goal should be to get to nishta, to become very fixed and to actually become, you know, free from the mind and the sufferings that it creates and begin to really see that we're not this mind and body and really be satisfied and happy all the time. On a soul level. And then, you know, after a long period of practice in nishtha, it says that one then gets a little ruchi, and then when that ruchi, that taste really grows, that will turn into attachment. And then for a long practice of attachment, then bhava and then prema. So if we can just get to this first level, then we can really have a solid standing and be able to, you know, roll with the waves of material nature. So I think we have to see what is our personal. It's not a mental thing. We can practice Krishna consciousness on the mental platform, and that has no taste actually, and that won't really sustain us. We have to have that personal experience, that awakening. So we have to see if am I having that awakening or not. If not, then why not?
Arigato. In the description of the qualities of pure devotional service, one is that it's very rare. And Rupa Goswami talks about how the higher stages of devotion past nishta are rare because Krishna starts to give himself to the devotee. And there's a way in which it's a very personal thing. He, you know, just like in any relationship, before you actually really, you know, will be honest and give your heart to somebody, you really, it takes a little time to see that they're actually sincere and that their trust, you know, you develop love and trust over time and by seeing somebody's heart. So there's a similar development in our relationship with Krishna also, that he sees over time our trustworthiness. There's a tashaisha esha, vrivinute tanum swam. He reveals himself to whom he chooses. Nayamatma pravachanena labhyona bahuna na Medayana Bahuna Shutena Tashaisha Esha. Anyway, this verse says, you can find it. It's in the Shloka book. Nayamatma Pravachanena Labhyo Na Medayana Bahuna Shutena Yame Vaisha Vrinute Tena Labhyas Tashaisha Esha Vrinute Tanum Swam. It means that Krishna can't be attained by all kinds of intelligence, material intelligence, nor by much hearing, but it doesn't mean hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. It means by hearing all kinds of mental speculation, or any other kind of expertise. What page is it on? 359. Nayamatma pravachanena labhyona medaya na bahuna shutena. So he reveals himself to the person who he himself chooses. So we always have to remember, too, to be patient. This is the advice of Rupa Goswami when he says, utsaha nischaya dharya tat tat karma pravartanat. He gives this kind of advice that we should be patient. So in our practice, we remember that it's not us reaching up to get something, but it's us being sincere in such a way that Krishna notices us. And we should chant like that and perform our service like that. That and the determination, Prabhupada describes like the little bird who goes to the ocean and lays her eggs, and then the ocean comes and steals the eggs, and the little sparrow goes and says, "Give me my eggs back." And then, no, ha, ha, ha. And then the little bird says, "I'll peck out every drop of water from the ocean. I want my eggs back." And ocean says, "Go ahead." So the bird starts pecking. And everyone's thinking, this is ridiculous. Until Garuda comes with all his power and says, "Give the bird's eggs back." And ocean says, "Here's your eggs back." So the idea is that, you know, we don't have power to come up to a stage, but if we act in such a way with this kind of qualities of determination, sincerity, that Krishna will notice and he'll come to us and he'll choose us. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to say, don't try to see Krishna. Try to work in such a way that Krishna will see you. In high school, my coach used to tell me, let the game come to you. You're trying too hard. Stop jamming it in there. And let the game come to you. And then it's like, oh, okay. So let Krishna come. You know, you're at his door. Wait. Let him come. And in that, there's satisfaction. You know, you don't have to be a great devotee. Just be a good devotee. That's another instruction. And also, you know, relish the scripture, have faith, and understand that you'll get everything and more than you can imagine. Vanchatita. Vanchatita is the name of a devotee, Vanchatita Das, but it's also a term that Rupa Goswami gives, Sanatana Goswami gives in the Stavamala. And it means that Krishna fulfills your desires more than you can ever imagine. Vancha means desires. Atita means beyond your imagination. So wherever you are now, just hunker down and stay in there, and Krishna will come. Yes. And of course, perfect your practice.
One devotee was talking with in Vrindavan with the Goswami of the Radharaman temple, and he said very one nice thing. He said that in the youth, you give your life to Krishna, and in the old age, he gives you back. So, vanchatita that way. So, at the start, it may not look like, you know, why Krishna is not responding, but when he starts, then that experience is, that personal experience is very overwhelming for the self also.
Nice. Sometimes when we get locked out, then we get that the hankering increases. I mean, people go through different stages of their life, and you can see sometimes when somebody's getting a taste and then they don't have it, then they become more desirous to get it back. It's compared in the Bhagavatam. Well, it's slightly different example. But in any case, in the fifth chapter of the first canto, there's a description by Narada Muni. He says that somebody who's tasted Krishna consciousness in the beginning can never forget that taste, no matter what happens to them. And also, it's described in Bhagavatam that for someone in an advanced stage of devotional service, when they're experiencing Krishna and they see Krishna and then Krishna disappears, it's like they've lost It's like someone was given the most valuable gem and all of a sudden they lost it. What's the anxiety level? Their anxiety is very high. They're trying to see Krishna. So we should develop that kind of feeling. Anybody else want to say a nice thing? Yes.
Hare Krishna. My personal experience with regards to, you know, change of attitude, personality, you know, after coming into Krishna consciousness, you know, has been profound. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where the Lord describes the characteristics of asuras. Dambo darpo bhimanascha kuroda parushyamevacha ajnanam chabijatasya partha sampadam asurim. So the Lord here says pride, arrogance, conceit, krodha, anger, parusham, harshness, ajnanam means ignorance. These are the characteristics of people who are, you know, in the demonic mode. All of us have characteristics of this since we are born in this material world, since we are all afflicted by the three modes of material nature. So, you know, the sattvic guna, the tamoguna, and the rajoguna. So one of the things that a devotee will notice when he is in Krishna consciousness, and you can actually, you know, do a what is called as a review once a year or periodically to see how your how these characteristics are being affected by, you know, in you, and you will notice that these characteristics tend to diminish over time. So you tend to be more situated in the sattvic guna and experience a sense of centeredness. You know, you're not easily swayed by any material afflictions, whether it's some gain you get or some loss you get. You know, you are very centered. You get some sort of a strength. Very hard to describe. It's not spiritual. It's not material strength. It's, you know, I would term it as spiritual strength. And it gives you a tremendous confidence that no matter what, you'll be able to overcome that adversity. So that's one of the experiences that one will feel. And you will, and the, you know, the talking about the heart being in synchronous, you know, in being in harmony and all that, you can see that those people who are really realized have a sense of peace in them. And they exude this confidence, affection or love for everything that's around them. So you get that confidence and that centeredness, you know. Bala.
Thank you, Balaram Chandra Prabhu. Haribo. Dainidi, go ahead.
Wonderful class, Prabhu. I hope that everyone understands what I said about giving money wasn't aimed at anyone in particular, but especially I hope that people can feel my heart, because whenever I see any devotee in this room, especially every devotee in this room, and most of the devotees in this room are Indian, I feel lots of love. I feel encouragement. You know, to see, because there's a lot of, you know, I won't get into it, but the point is this temple is very special. There's so many special devotees here. And, you know, Vaisheshika is leading so nicely. But if people weren't following so nicely, it wouldn't be the same place. Vaisheshika can be here preaching like crazy, and there would be a bunch of nonsenses like me here. But there's so many nice devotees that are coming and taking initiation and taking it very seriously, and it's very encouraging for me. And it's making my heart bigger just to be here and associate with all of you.
We could feel the electromagnetic force. Haribo! I don't think we can top that, so well, let's end on that very sweet note from Dayaniti Prabhu. And thank you all for coming tonight. We started with the verse from the Shirsha Upanishad, Kurvan eviha karmani jijivishek shatam samaha evam twai nanyatitosina karma lipyate nare. That if we follow the Ishavasya spirit, which means to remember Krishna all the time, and remember he owns everything, he controls everything, don't try to control the outcome. He's doing it already. Just serve him and to the best of your capacity and give everything to him and sacrifice your heart especially and everything else that goes with it. And then you can live in the world without being touched. The gentleman who left the room gave that verse from the Bhagavad Gita about being like a lotus living in the mud but not touched by it at any time. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gopremanande Haribo.